opportunity to be here and talk. And actually, I was here since the past few years, past few weeks, since the Mathematica Summer School, which turned out to be a very maximally useful experience. So I'd like to thank the organizer of the school also at the same time. So following the lead of Kolya Gromov, I'll be giving a Blackboard talk. Actually, this will be 100% Blackboard talk. So I'll be talking about a duality in N-Course 4 super Young deals between objects that look like that that define the scattering, the S matrix, of the scattering of unshelled particles, and in momentum space, and polygonal Wilson loops in the same theory. So this is a duality between position space and momentum space. And it's defined, as far as we understand, only in N-Course 4. In the planar limit. We also, as of this day, there is no known derivation of this duality. It's not derived. But that doesn't mean we don't understand a lot about it. There's a lot we do understand. And what I want to talk about is what we understand about it. Yes. So I will not try to make a historical review. So what I'll try to do is try to go, since this is starting to be a, this idea is starting to mature, I just try to take the shortest route to the duality and just explain it in the simplest possible terms. So, but before I do that, let me just try to sketch where it comes from. What really launched this was, before there was the duality, the symmetry was there. And this was the observed around 2006 by people who did computation of integrands in this theory, a three-loop, four-loop, so Byrne, Dixon, et al. The observe, also I think the observation was made formally in the paper by Kochensky, Sakachev, and Draman and M, that the integrand possesses the dual conformal symmetry that we heard about that in this conference so far. So the symmetry was there before the duality. And the duality really was formulated precisely as coming from T-duality argument by Aldai and Messina at strong coupling. And then after that, people try to, once the duality was formulated, you can try to calculate it at weak coupling and check that it works. So this is where it comes from, roughly. So, yes, thanks. So, in order to understand this duality better, now it's understood as a duality not only between MHV amplitude and so on, but before, between the whole S matrix for all and K MHV. And all number of K, number of legs, and number of loops. And the first point I want to emphasize is that thinking in terms of the, it would be very useful to think in terms of, instead of just one elicity component at a time, to think about the whole S matrix as a whole, and we're going to see that it fits into a tight object, a logically contained object that, about which is much more understandable than the individual components. So here I'm going to list the features of this duality. And the first thing is, really, if we really want to understand why it works, if the duality knows about loop corrections to a scattering amplitude, it should know about the trees in the first place. So the first thing we're really going to try to find are, where are the trees in this duality? And so it should be a duality that works for both trees and loops. So one thing we know about tree amplitudes is that they have pole singularities in factorization channels. So the simplest amplitude in this theory is the MAG amplitude, which is given by the famous Park-Taylor formula. Yes. So the endpoint MAG amplitude, tree amplitude, there's a momentum conservation delta function. There's a similar fermionic object. And there's a famous Park-Taylor denominator. So this object has singularities when two adjacent particles become collinear. And these on the Wilson loop side will correspond to two adjacent segments becoming collinear with each other. I'm going to discuss this later. And this amplitude doesn't have more interesting multi-particle singularities. So I'm going to look at a slightly more interesting object now, the NMHV tree amplitude, which if we take a general multi-particle collinear singularity, has nice factorization property as, so if one Mandelstam invariant goes to zero, it diverges like 1/p² times the product of two MHV tree amplitudes. And let's try to see how such singularity should correspond to on the Wilson loop side. So on the Wilson loop side, to this duality, these momenta, this is pi plus one, this is mapped to xi, similarly xj. So the corners of the Wilson loop correspond to regions in this diagram. And the singularity corresponds to a limit in which two corners of the Wilson loop become null separated from each other. The limit when this propagator goes on shell is the limit where this and this become null separated from each other. So if there's going to be such a duality that works for trees, we're going to get a pole singularity in this limit. So if we would just try to write down Feynman diagrams, how would we get such a pole? If we write down the most naive things we can get by exchanging one particle. Here we have a coupling. This is P plus one. We have a coupling that's integral dx mu, a mu along these sides. And you plug in the gluon propagator, we get an integral that looks like dt ds over xi minus xj square plus, so this is what you get when the propagator is there. And I'm going to discuss what this diagram looks like in the neighborhood of when those vertices are very close to these corners, which is where the singularity will come from. So what matters is the lower integration region of this. And there's a dot product like that if we start to expand. Xi minus xj dot tpi plus spj plus 1 plus ts term. And interested in the near zero, and at the limit where this object goes to zero, this integral looks like as a general form ds dt over epsilon plus s plus t for some appropriate rescaling. And if we do this integral from zero, you get a form that looks like epsilon log epsilon plus analytic. So where epsilon is this invariant. So this diagram in this limit looks like xi minus xg square times log of xi minus xg square plus analytic. So we see that we're very far from pole singularity. The way we're going to get a pole singularity, however, is very clear, is you're going to get it if we put derivatives on this interaction point. And if you put instead an interaction that looks like that, for instance, dx, the indices are going to come in later. If we put an interaction that looks like integral over dx of df, which is the second derivative of the gauge field, and then integral a mu dx mu on the other side, then we take two derivatives of this, and we're going to get the pole singularity that we need. So this object is going to contain derivative coupling on the edges. And now let me make a very important zeroth order point about the counting of the coupling constant, which is that on this side, there's two sort of singularities that the, so the NMHV tree amplitude is a singularity that looks like that in this channel. But the MHV one loop amplitude also has a similar singularity in this channel where there's a one loop cut. And that now it's still MHV on both sides. And it's the same XI, XG here. And we know from the work that I referred to by the explicit computations that this singularity is correctly described by this gluon exchange that I've just, the mu dx mu interaction. But the point is, this is a one loop singularity. This is suppressed by g squared compared to this singularity. But it comes from it changing exactly the same field. So what we learn is something very important in this duality, is that the interaction is actually df over g squared. And actually, there's an NC here to get the right color factor. So what we learn is that when we take this, so we're going to add negative velocity gluons by inserting more and more of these sort of interactions. And what we learn is the number of coupling constant here, the number of loops, the number of loops on the scaling amplitude side is equal to the number of loops plus k on the Wilson loop side, where k is the number of negative delisted gluons, which in this superspace form is translated to the number of theras is equal to 4k. Yes. So we learned something very important about this duality, is that the loop counting depends on how far you are from MHV. And diagrams that look the same are going to correspond to different loop level on the scattering amplitude side. So let's try to see if that sort of makes sense at higher orders. So we can draw, for instance, a n square MHV tree factorization. So you can have a process in which you factorize to this propagator becomes null, and some other propagator becomes null. And let me put some legs here, some legs here, some legs here. And let's say this is the same point. And if we try to look at the dual graph, this has a singularity, and this become null, and this become null. This is vxk. And you can convince yourself that if you have Feynman diagrams that look like that, in this theory, it's going to have what would be xj, xi, xk. It's going to have the same sort of singularities. And we can look at other things like NMHV. One loop, we will have a singularity that might look like that. And where all these bubbles are MHV. And similarly, such a singularity would be contained in such a diagram. So you can, what's the important point is that if you look at how many, this counting here, the number of loops plus k, is also what you get by counting sort of the independent non-trivial multiparticle factorization channels that the amplitude has. Here, once I've cut everything down to an HV tree amplitude, there's no other interesting multiparticle channel. So these are all the interesting singularities of the object, and they are all going to be, they can be obtained by diagrams of these sort of topologies. So now let's try to formulate the duality precisely. So what should the tree amplitude should be dual? What should they be dual to? The general S matrix, what should be dual to? This is a function of P's and Grassmann variables, eta. We know that through the duality, we can only define this polygon, the size of this polygon of length pi, and we can only really define this polygon if the polygon closes, otherwise we don't get something gauge invariant. So there's a momentum conservation delta function that we're just not going to get in any way from this picture. We just have to write by hand. Similarly, if supermomentum is not conserved, the Wilson loop is not going to close in superspace, and we're really not going to be able to define it. So there's these two factors that there's no way we're going to derive. And we also see that the duality really naturally reproduce our multiparticle factorization channels, but the Park-Taylor prefactor, which I erased, is not going to come out. So we just put it by hand. And now this is a function of these superposed variables. So this is the precise statement of the duality that we should look at. And this theta here, as explained, whenever we because to match the loop coupling constant, this is really theta over a certain number that depends on the coupling constant, where A is G squared meters over 4 pi squared. Maybe up to factors of 2, which I'm not guaranteeing in this talk. So we see that the term proportional to theta fourth, which is the NMHV tree, is going to get the 1 over lambda factor that we needed a second ago. So the duality will be of this form. The next thing we can say is that just to get the shortest route to the answer, is that the sort of key property of the tree amplitude is that they are invariant under, well, they're invariant under translations in superspace. So d over d theta of the expectation value of the Wilson loop has to be equal to 0 for the duality to make any sense. And that means that the Wilson loop, d of theta of w as an operator statement, should be a symmetry of the theory. And the only symmetry with the right quantum number is a Poincaré supersymmetry, translation in superspace, of the Wilson loop. It has to be proportional. So next thing we write down is that, let me write the index. And now we have to remember this factor. So what we need is a supersymmetric covariant Wilson loop. That's what we need for this duality. It turns out there is such an object in the literature. It was studied extensively in the 80s, and was believed for quite some time to exist, but the proof that to construct this object, you have to solve constraints related to supersymmetry, and the proof that these constraints actually are the solution is very non-obvious, and actually was done by someone, by Arnaud and Schneider in this room. So this object exists, and just put it on this contour and see what it means, what it looks like. But let me just make another. Yeah, so let's keep moving with the story. The next. So the Wilson loop corresponds to integrating a certain superconnection around each side, and superconnection looks like A is dx mu a mu, and then there's a term. Then the next thing you get is some psi bar theta, and then you get some d phi theta, and then you get some d psi theta. You just keep going along the multiplet. And then there's a dg theta. There are sort of nonlinear terms. It keeps going. And then there are also theta terms like this. The first thing I want to recall now about this construction is that this factor of the coupling constant that really sits in front of all of these things, a 1/4, a to the 1/2, a to the 3/4, 1 over a, so on. And what is annoying to do, let's try to see if we cannot get rid of these constants. So it's just somehow annoying to have inverse factors of the coupling constants. And in particular, it makes it not even obvious that the object starts with we don't get negative powers of the coupling in the answer. So we better check that. And there's a simple way to see that we don't get negative power of the coupling ever. And the argument is a simple writing of the Lagrangian due to Chalmers and Siegel. So let me just write the Lagrangian for you. There's 1 over g square, let's see, schematically, psi bar d slash psi. D phi square 2 plus u kawas. This is Lagrangian up to factors of 2. And the trick is to rescale the fields. If I take phi goes to g to lambda 1/2 phi, then I see that this term I get rid of the a 1/2 here. I do the same for psi goes going to go to lambda to 3/4 phi, psi bar is going to go to lambda 1/4 phi. A mu obviously goes to a mu. Nothing I can do about that. So what do I do about the G? What you do is you introduce an auxiliary field such that, this was really F, the field strength tensor, where F is dA plus a wedge A. So F is going to go to lambda G. And actually, it's only the self-dual part of F that we need. So this will be a spin 1, well, anti-self dual auxiliary field. And when you introduce this auxiliary field, the action becomes, when there's rescaling, you get Fg plus lambda g squared. So now I'm going to write the new action. So this is this part. This, the kinetic term just gets rescaled. 1 over g squared gets removed. One of the Yukawa, the Yukawas get rescaled differently. The one with 2 psi's get rescaled more and ends up proportional to lambda. The other one ends up on this side. And the scalar interaction ends up here. What do we learn? Well, we learn that if we compute the, now we've gotten rid of all the factors of the coupling in the Wilson loop. And now this is a G. We've gotten rid of all factors of the coupling, and what do we learn? We learn that if we're going to compute things to zeroth order in the coupling, which means we're computing 3 amplitudes on the scattering amplitude side, the whole computation is done inside self-dual angles. And then, as we start computing loops, we start expanding around self-dual angles. So this is an action for self-dual angles because to this order, you see that G is just a Lagrange multiplier which force F alpha beta equals 0. So which imposes the self-duality condition. So the first thing that we learn is that threes are dual to self-dual Yang-Mill Wilson loop. And one thing which is easy to see, but which I will just state, is that after we do this field rescaling, so the Susi transformation, but the superconnection is covariant up to a gauge transformation plus up to B of something plus A wedge something. But more importantly, Q bar of A, if you're careful with the field normalization, is order G square, order lambda. So what we get is a huge symmetry enhancement at tree level. Because we're restricting to self-dual Yang-Mills, we get that also Q bar equals 0, and that leads to Yang-Yang symmetries of trees. So the fact that trees are invariant under Yang-Yang at tree level, and then that there's some right-hand side at loop level, is completely manifest in this formulation. And it's really because trees are computed by an integrable subsector of the theory, self-dual Yang-Mills. So now let's see exactly how this duality works. So I've made a sketch about the factorization. Let me erase this one. We've seen that the derivative of the field strength was exactly the sort of thing we needed to get pole sort of singularity in multiple optical channels. So now that we have the explicit form, let's see that the poles actually work out to be what they have to be. And here I'm just going to work out one part of the, just going to do a small part of this, well, just going to do part of the computation. One of the properties of this Wilson loops is that it is null, and but it's supersymmetrically null. Supersymmetrically null because otherwise we will have order, we'll have 8 degrees of freedom per edge, but on the scattering amplitude side we only have 4 fermions per edge. So this constraints gets the number of fermion degrees of freedom right. And so let's check the following. Let's check that when we take this factorization limit in which we have these null. This is a super null Wilson loop. Let's check that it factorizes into a product of 2 super null conditions. In other words, that this condition perpetuates itself under factorization. These are all closed Wilson loops. And it's actually there's a very simple way to see this. And actually do this computation, which comes from the physical interpretation of this superconnection. This superconnection obeys integrability conditions that I have just mentioned, which are that roughly there's no curvature with spin one in the theta direction. What does that mean? So there's no curvature that is would be spin one in Lorentz spin and symmetrical in R symmetry index, which is a non-trivial constraint on the superconnection, which imposes part of the equations of motions. And there's a similar thing in the between the fermion and boson direction. What does this mean geometrically? It means that we're integrating the Wilson loop over some contour. This is the bosonic contour, and on top of this bosonic contour, there are the theta directions. And what this means is, I can choose a theta contour in many ways. There's no curvature in this direction. I can deform the theta contours in many, many ways. And in particular, I can do that to help me analyze this limit. More precisely, if along a side, x is xi plus tx. So if I parameterize x along a side like this, then theta will parameterize s like this. And the statement is that you can add any function that's proportional to the spin or associated with this p. Anything, and you're not going to change the result of this integral. So to simplify this computation, well, we're interested in singularities near this cusp, so let's just choose. And since the change of theta is proportional to, since this itself is proportional to lambda, we can just assume that the theta contour is a constant here. And then it does something to approach the other cusp correctly. But the theta contour is just a constant here, and we've gotten rid of the d theta term in the superconnection. And to analyze this limit even more simply, we can use Poincaré symmetry to put this theta. So we do that on both cusps, and we just put this theta to zero. So now here is just going to couple to a mu dx mu, the lowest term. And up, the coupling that we have is just, it's really just going to be g. So let me write the indices. Now, there's a dotted index here, and there's a dotted index here, and all of the other indices are symmetrized. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, alpha, beta, gamma, delta. So we have a coupling like that.
In this, we've just seen that VG is the right pole singularity.
And the quotient of the pole, well, it's very easy to convince oneself. In the null limit, xi minus xj is null. Let's say it goes to lambda, lambda tilde, alpha, dot. So in this limit, g really becomes the only natural thing it could become, which is lambda beta, lambda gamma. The only natural spin one object you can make in this limit. This object is actually symmetrical by the equation of motions on these two indices. So actually you get lambda alpha, lambda beta, lambda delta. Well, now the dx kind of doesn't fit in this picture, obviously. But if one does carefully the computation, one gets that an individual edge gives you a contribution proportional to 1 over, if this is edge I plus 1, 1 over pi dot xi minus xj. And upstairs, there is pi, which is really using spinor notation, which is lambda I, lambda tilde I. And this is dotted here, so in x. The important point is that you get two edges near this corner. And the other one gives you the same thing with I minus 1. All the tilde variables are dotted against xi minus xj, and the lambda tilde cancel in this ratio. So what this really looks like is lambda I, and this is the index delta that was left, over I lambda minus lambda I plus 1, lambda I plus 1, lambda. And if you use Schouten identities, you can show that this is proportional to lambda, as usual, the same as the other ones. There's a Schouten identity here. So the point is, what we find is that in this limit, the diagram becomes proportional to lambda alpha theta alpha to the fourth. In other words, we get a delta function, Fermionic, a Grassmann delta function of this theta. And we did this computation setting theta to zero. We can now just use translation invariance to put back theta on. So what we get is that we get lambda delta 0 slash 4 of lambda theta I minus theta j, where lambda is, actually this is null direction. So we see that there's a null limit. In this null limit, we get exactly what we need such that the null condition is preserved under factorization. And if one does the computation carefully and gets the prefactors, one gets that the super Wilson loop in this limit becomes equal to this, the product of two super Wilson loops, times 1 over xi minus xj square, this delta function, and other factors. And other factors are exactly the same factorization properties as you get when you do the scattering amplitude computation. So what have we learned? Well, this is not the complete analysis, so I haven't really shown that you get this product. But the nice property about very useful property about this action is that there's not really any loops in it. It's a trivial theory. It's not three-level exact, actually. It's one loop exact. The one loop corrections are something important, but there's no infinities of loop in this theory, and there's a very limited limited number of Feynman graphs that you can draw that will contribute to this singularity. So you can add. So you cannot add, for instance, a gauge field interaction like this, because there is no AA propagator in this theory. All you can add would be an AG propagator, but you already eaten up all your fermions there, so you cannot put this here. So you only get Feynman graphs that couple other edges, or cover other edges like that, but that doesn't change the singularity in this limit. And because this, I'm sketching the argument, but there's really a few, very small number of Feynman graphs that you can draw, and what you then show is that this really factorizes, and then if you have a complicated graph that you can draw in this Sylvester-Yangmuir theory, it's going to factorize in this limit as a pole times whatever you would get for super Wilson loop in this theory. So you really get, so we learn something amazing. Is that the super loop in Sylvester-Yangmuir factorizes like three amplitudes exactly. Yeah, if you've been in this business since the work of Freddy and DCF and W, you know that once you get the factorization channels right, you're done. You prove that it's going to work always. So what we've seen is the amazing fact that something which on one side of the duality is interpreted as a long distance small momentum long distance factorization of amplitudes is exactly mimicked by the short distance singularity of the theory. So long distance singularities of the amplitudes are exactly mapped to the short distance singularity of the Wilson loop. Which is a really amazing statement that you will never believe. You will never believe is even thinkable until you see it at work. Yeah. But really, you can. It's just once you've done this elementary computation, it's just the same step apply all over again to compute the factorizations of an arbitrary and k major amplitude, and it's clear that it's just going to work for all of them. The next thing is to look at our loops, loop correction. On the Wilson loop side, remember that the action is an action for Sylvester-Yangmuir plus g square times a certain operator, which is this L4 that Bruce has written down earlier today. So, expanding around Sylvester-Yangmuir in the theory is telling you, is begging you to compute loops by inserting this operator. So, because everything is proportional to the coupling, it still lets loops computed by taking expectation value of this Lagrangian. So this makes contact with the Lagrangian insertion procedure that was discussed this morning. So if this is the point x, let me just x prime, this is the point x prime prime, the two loop correction is going to be equal to, that's a Wilson loop, two loop is equal to the integral over those four points. of this correlation function. Suitably regularized, there's many ways you can regularize, whether you can put D4 here, or something which is not, which is dangerous, is to multiply by product of all xi minus x prime. So define the scheme that you want to get something finite, and you have a Wilson loop in some well-defined scheme. So, and this correlation function is now evaluated within self-dual alignments. So, So depending on, this might include graphs like that, for instance. At MHV level, and at NMHV, there will be more things, and so on. So this Lagrangian insertion procedure, sorry, I missed a propagator, is really a way to propagate the perturbation theory. You will calculate this graph anyway, but now you're repackaging it in terms of an integration over those two points. And so now let me wrap up this story by, I started this story by saying that looking at the whole amplitudes together gave us a self-contained way, a logically contained way of looking at the physics. And to wrap up this story, what we have to do is relate the singularity. So we've looked at the singularities of the tree amplitude and shown that they match on both sides. Now let's look at the singularities of the loop integrand. This has a new kind of singularities. When, if I move this cusp, there's going to be a point where it becomes not separated from Lagrangian insertion. So to wrap up this story, I have to analyze this limit. And let's do it at first order. If this operator is F square, here, let me put an F square, the first thing you're going to get is you insert a propagator here. And the propagator of an F correlated with the integral over an edge has a single pole singularity. And so you get a single pole. This is xi, x prime. This is proportional to xi minus x prime, 1 over this, times, you knock out one field strength by having this propagator, times an f that sits here. And one can show that this really gets dressed with a null Wilson line that goes here and here. So in doing this computation at the cardoon level, but what you find when you do the careful computation is that this object here is nothing other than the forward limit of an NMHV, three amplitudes. So what happens is that, let me describe this in the field theory language. So in the field theory language, if you have some loop, this region is the loop region, this is the region looking at all. If I'm looking at the region where this region, when this propagator becomes null, in this limit it factorizes as a pole times an amplitude with a plus and a minus elliptic gluon going on. So we see that I've added a negative elliptic gluon. So when I take this forward limit, I increase the MHV degree by 1, and I've knocked out a loop. This is the reason why you have to look at our k at the same time to get a consistent picture. Now we have a set of objects which close under all of the limits that we can consider. and k plus 1 to minus 1 and the ground. This forward limit is actually very singular, and the correct and efficient prescription for computing it was given. It's worth spending a few times, because this is a limit that in general makes one very nervous. In this theory, a well-defined way to take this limit found that instead of taking, it's just a trick, instead of taking limit of x0 a function of x, where we know and we can show that f as a limit, we define the limit as integral, as a contour integral, dx over x, or f of x. And now we can extract the limit from well-defined data slightly away from this limit. So the formula that we end up with, written in momentum twister notation, looks like contour integral over a certain GL2 of momentum twisters, we replace this point by AB. I'm sketching, I will explain the notation in a second. It's a manifestly supersymmetric formula. It will be, say, x1, an minus 1, 1, AB. So there's some Fermion object, but everything's manifestly supersymmetric, times the tree amplitudes. And the tree amplitude, it's a lower point amplitude with two particles added. And there's a certain shift of the loop variable. And the idea of the formula is that this contour integral is really a contour integral over two off-diagonal elements, the two off-diagonal elements of GL2. How much time do I have? Oh, okay. 1 minute? Yes, let me just finish this. Well, actually, let me wrap up instead. That would be more efficient. So at the end of the day, the pictures that you can draw that emerge from these computations is that if you look, for instance, at a two-loop unitarity cut on the scattering amplitude side, or you cut three propagators, this is a sequence of three steps where we cut one, a second, and a third. And you can directly map this to a sequence of operation on the Wilson loop side, where you started with two integrands corresponding to those two regions, cut this propagator, which was this elementary limit in which you get the forward limit, cut this second propagator, which turned this into this. This should be kinked. Let me emphasize that these are not parallel. And then there will be a third limit here when you cut the third. So we can map all of these factorization statements on one side of the duality to simple factorization statements on the other side of the duality, which really makes it clear that the duality is going to work in general. So in summary, this is so the point I hope to have conveyed in this talk is that the chiral super Wilson loop is really a logically complete object that you can use to discuss the loop integrand. And in more recent work, proposing that on the Wilson loop side, it's completely artificial to, there's no good reason to just restrict on theta. And you can turn on theta and theta bars and look at the full Wilson loop. There's no reason to stop there. And physical intuition which emerges, well, something which emerges is that this object, what are these variables good for? They're really the logically self-contained object to look at integrated quantities. You get anomalies when you integrate this, but the anomalies are removed
by this new variable. So let me stop here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Are there some questions? Are there any questions? Yes.
Where does the planar limit come in?
On the planar, on the Wilson loop side, you need it in order to make the statements that this factorization is a simple product. So it will just have more, but it will not factorize in any sense away from the planar limit. And on the scattering amplitude side, you need it only when you start discussing this integrand. If you're on the planar limit, you have well-defined region momenta, and you can use it to have design a well-defined integrand. If you're not in the planar limit, you don't have that. So on both sides of the dualities, the object you're talking about stops to exist.
More questions?
And is it make sense to take the limit where Wilson loop becomes circular on BPS?
The limit where what becomes BPS? I see, you want to make it, yes, you want to deform this into a circular one. Not so clear. I don't know the relation between this Wilson loop and a BPS one. One thing that happens, for instance, is that there's a miracle that has to occur when you compute this Wilson loop in the Sevdo-Yang-Mills theory to get the tree amplitude, is that everything ends up being simple rational function, the excellent momenta. And you start making these sides curved, then this miracle stops to occur. So it's not clear how this limit would be related to Yes.
I think what you meant the Wilson loop when you have additional scalar contributing to the connection. And but these are not the same Wilson loop. It's right, like Wilson loop, it doesn't have scalars in there.
Yeah, I don't know how this I don't know how the BPS Wilson loops are related from to these covariant Wilson loops. So these are not BPS, they're covariant. They're not invariant. I don't know what is the link.
Okay, so no further questions. Let's thank the speaker once more.